Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to welcome all of y'all to Smart Love Radio. I'm your host, the Supreme Litigant. And before I begin, I just got to play one of my favorite songs. I do not own the copyright to this song, but I just got to play it. I got to play it. Show. Sorry about that, y'all, but I just had to do that. That song has been on my mind all day. Okay, the topic of the show tonight will be how to sue the police Q&A. If you have any questions not relating to that topic, that's okay. That's fine. I try to keep it, about 10, maybe 15 minutes on questions that are not related to the topic tonight. So if you have any questions, go ahead and press 1. And I'll turn your microphone on and we can just go from there. Hope everybody is doing pretty good tonight, man, because I'm doing great. I had a great day today. I just left the barber shop. Just got that fresh fade, looking good, feeling good. Okay, so the first thing that I want to talk about tonight, I'm going to go ahead and pull back up my ebook. I had a guy called in last night. He and his brother, they purchased my ebook. One of them purchased the ebook, and he just gave me some comments on it, and he really liked it. So I'm hoping that anybody who has a copy of my ebook, I'm hoping that they call in tonight and just give me some constructive criticism on it. If it's not good, let me know. If it's good, let me know. If it's not helping you, anything, just please let me know, because my job is to get y'all to comprehend what I'm trying to do. What you're trying to do in these federal courts when you're trying to vindicate your private rights. That's my job. Let me go back here. Let's see. Hold on, let me get a mic check. My mic sound pretty good. Mic check. Okay, mic pretty good. Okay, right now I'm going to go ahead and start reading from my ebook. We're going to start with a Rule 12b6 motion to dismiss. And I want y'all to pay close attention to that, because that is that's exactly the way it works on the criminal side too. It works the same exact way, So like when when police officers file criminal charges against your person, and you get a copy of this complaint and you go to the facts section of the complaint, because those are the elements that the judge is going to apply the law to, and the judge will apply the law to those set of facts, and will determine as a matter of law if those facts are sufficient or not to justify conviction against you. That's how it works on the criminal side. That's how it works on the civil side. Where is it? Okay. When you file in a Rule 12b-6 motion to dismiss, when defense counsel, whoever you're suing, they hire an attorney. I always call them defense counsel because they're the defense and you're the offense. You're the offense and they're the defense. So defense counsel will file a Rule 12b-6 motion to dismiss. And another word, you know, for that is called a demur, or something like that. I'm gonna go ahead and I'm pulling up the legal definition right now because I want y'all to understand why it's called that. I mean, I want y'all to understand the definition of a demur. So where is it? Here it is, right here. Let's see, there it is, right there. Okay, looks like it's called a demur. A demurrer challenges a complaint by asserting that the complaint at issue should be dismissed because it fails to state sufficient facts to constitute a cause of action. Essentially, this defense asserts that even if all the factual allegations in the complaint are true, they do not give rise to a legally cognizable claim for relief. So an example of that, based on this, it says, for example, if someone filed a complaint saying that their coworker gave them a dirty look, even if this allegation is factually true, the law does not provide a remedy for this type of wrong. So do y'all understand that? The reason you're filing this motion to dismiss is because the complaint is legally insufficient as a matter of law. It's legally insufficient. There's nothing there to warrant a cause of action. There's nothing there to warrant criminal charges against you. So they're going to this is what they normally do. If you file a prima facie complaint, they are not going to file a Rule 12b-6 motion to dismiss. They're going to answer your complaint with a shotgun pleading. That is what they're going to do. They're going to try to throw you off and confuse the hell out of you. They're going to file an answer to your complaint, and they're going to file so many so-called affirmative defenses. They're not even affirmative defenses. The police officers who I sued, their attorney, he actually filed the same paperwork, you know, but he just changed the names on it. But he filed the exact same answer to my complaint. So when he did that, I read over it, and I'm like, what the hell is this? And so I called him, and I asked him, could he withdraw his motion? I mean, not his motion, but could he withdraw his answer, you know, and supplement it, you know, with another answer, because this doesn't make any sense or whatever. So he wouldn't do it, and I filed a motion to strike. And then we got on a conference call, me and the judge and defense counsel. We got on a conference call, and the judge explained to me, he asked me would I withdraw the motion for right now, at least until after discovery. And I was like, okay, Your Honor, yeah, I'll do that. And so I filed my amended complaint. And, of course, once you file an amended complaint, they have to re-answer the complaint. So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, maybe he's not going to file a shotgun pleading this time. So, of course, he files another shotgun pleading. And at this point, I'm just like, you know what, I don't have time for this. So I filed another motion to strike. And the judge granted some of my motion to strike. And he denied it. He gave me reasons why. He gave me justifiable reasons why. And I agree with him for the most part. But anytime you are drafting your complaint, you need to anticipate your opponent's next move. That's what you need to do. This is a game. That's all this is. It's a game. So a Rule 12b-6, I'm going to read y'all the standard of a Rule 12b-6 motion, and then y'all can compare that Rule 12b-6 motion standard to why I say that a Rule 12b-6 motion is a demur. So give me a second. I'm looking it up right now. Let's see, 12. 6. Whoops. Motion to dismiss. And these are in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, by the way. So that Rule 12b6, motion to dismiss, it's in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Let's see. Where are we at? I think I got one right here. All right. Let me pull up the case right now, y'all. I'm pulling it up right now. Sorry for the delay. Again, if you have any questions, go ahead and press 1, and I'll turn your microphone on, and then, you know, we can you know, see if I can answer your questions. Okay, I'm pulling it up. Let's see. I'm scrolling through the paperwork. Well, not the paperwork, but I'm scrolling through this case right now, and I'm trying to find the standard for a Rule 12b6 motion to dismiss. I know it's in here.
Breach of contract of faith. Boom, boom, boom.
Should have did this before I got on. If I can't find it, I ain't going to worry about it. Matter of fact, let me just go straight to the rule. That's what I'll do. I'm going to go straight to the rule. Rule 12b6. That's what I'm going to do. Here we go. Okay. Where is it at? Here we go. It's loading up right now, y'all. Sorry about that. Okay. Where we at? Is that it? Come on. There we go. All right. If you are reading, you know, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, if you go to Rule 12, you go to 12B, Section B within that rule. It says every defense. Where is it? Oh, yeah, there it is right there. Every defense to a claim for relief in any pleading must be asserted in the responsive pleading if one is required, but a party may assert the following defenses by motion. Okay, and if you scroll down to this, you know, to subsection 6, in 12b6, it's going to say failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. That is why I say that a Rule 12b6 motion is very, that is why I say a Rule 12b6 motion is a demur. It's the same exact way in a criminal case, the same exact way the rule, that these principles apply to criminal and civil procedures. They cannot file criminal charges against you based on conclusions without facts to support those conclusions. That's a violation of due process, because how are you going to dispute an unstated factual allegation against you when there are no factual allegations against you? It makes no sense. Zero sense. The same way on the civil side. I can guarantee you, if you file a conclusory complaint, meaning if you file a complaint against police officers suing them and you haven't stated facts to support your conclusion, they are going to file a Rule 12b6 motion to dismiss immediately. And they're going to do it on qualified immunity grounds. That's what they're going to do. They're going to file a Rule 12b6. I know they're going to do it. They've done it to me before. So I know they're going to do it. They're not going to hesitate either. Okay, now let's get back to, I'm going to talk about a different section of the complaint right now. The easy stuff of this complaint, man, as far as the jurisdictional and the venue statement, all of that stuff is easy, because you can just copy and paste that and just make your smaller changes to it, but that's it. That's all you need to do. You don't have to do anything more than that. The most important part of your complaint is what I have always been telling y'all. If you have ever watched any of my videos, it is the ultimate facts section of your complaint. That is where your elements in support of each of your causes of actions against a police officer must be alleged. That is where they are. And if you want to understand what factual allegations that you need to make against this police officer, then you need to read cases, because they are declaring you, they are declaring your common law rights in case law, and they tell you all of the elements in support of each of your causes of actions that you want to know in the case law. I'm gonna see if I can find y'all one, because I'm working on the ebook. I'm actually doing a revised version of it, trying to make it more thorough. I'm adding some more cases in here to support my arguments, so y'all can understand what you're doing and how to properly allege a valid cause of action. That's what I'm doing. I was working on that today, actually. Now, let me go back up. Go back up. Where is it at? Where is it at? Hold on, y'all. Damn it, what is that? This damn thing. Okay, it's going to be down here. Almost got it, y'all. Give me a second. For example, okay. In this particular ebook, I am listing all of your clearly established rights that I know of. And then I have a footnote behind your right. And that footnote contains the case in support of the right being clearly established. So these police officers will not get immunity. Will not get immunity, period. So let's go. Let me see. Where is it at? Okay, for example, one clearly established right is, you know, you have a right to be free from malicious prosecution. And if you, there's footnote 23 in this book, in my ebook. And if you scroll down to footnote 23, where is it at? It's a long paragraph, but it's clearly established law, and it's supporting that you have a right to be free from malicious prosecution. And it tells you all of your elements. Like, for example, where is it at, right? For example, this court examined both federal law and Georgia law and indicated that for purposes of a Section 1983 malicious prosecution claim, the constituent elements of the common law tort of malicious prosecution includes, one, a criminal prosecution instituted or continued by the present defendant, two, with malice and without probable cause, three, that terminated in plaintiff's favor, and four, caused damage to the plaintiff accused. There you go. Those are all of your elements that you need to allege factual elements in support of that. So, for example, when it says a criminal prosecution instituted or continued by the present defendant, then you would allege John Doe prosecutor instituted or caused to be instituted and is continuing to prosecute plaintiff, where is it? Hold on. To prosecute plaintiff, and you would, in order for you to prove, like to prove malice and without probable cause, it's easy, but you need to go and read some case laws. You need to understand what they mean when they say malice and probable cause. So these are all questions of law. So when you plead your facts, the judge is going to, he's going to look at these facts and he's going to say if these facts are sufficient in law or not to justify this particular cause of action, which is the right to be free from malicious prosecution. That's how this stuff works. It's always based on facts, always. And it works the same exact way in criminal cases. Okay, let me go. If I'm confusing y'all, you know, please go ahead and press one and just let me know, because I'm not trying to confuse anybody. If you don't understand, let me know. Getting back to the ebook. Got a lot of callers tonight. Seems like everybody is just listening. I'm going back to the complaint section, y'all. So let's see. Let's go. I'm going back. Where is it? Oh, it's down here. Okay. So I'm back to the ultimate facts section of the complaint. The ultimate facts section. I'm going to keep pretty much saying the same thing over and over when it comes to the ultimate facts section, because that is how I won my case, if you ask me. So you want to begin your ultimate fact section with how, who, what, when, where, how the incident occurred. You know, you want to, if you can, you know, get the date, the time, the street name, or if there are any witnesses, you know, make sure you have some witnesses' names, stuff like that. Excuse me. You want to allege all of that in the complaint. Who, what, when, where, how. If you don't remember any of this stuff, that's okay. What's most important is you remember that what they did to you. That is most, that is very important, is that you remember that. You know, after you put that into the complaint, you want to allege facts that show how you and the officer, how the incident between you and the officer started. After you, you know, allege the complaint. I'm sorry. After you allege, you know, where it happened. Okay. You allege then how the incident started, and you need to be very, very detailed in all of this stuff that you, that you know, in the ultimate facts section of your complaint. You need to be very detailed, but keep it as brief as possible. You don't want it too long, but you want to be very detailed. It's possible. I've done it before. Let's see. After that, after you, you know, you allege the facts. Let me see. So I'm trying to see how I'm going to word this, y'all. Cause I'm always trying to use legalese, but I know some people are not, you know, that some, such, you know, sometimes people just can't understand this stuff. Let's see. Who is this? Okay. I'm sorry, y'all. I was just checking my cell phone. My phone is always ringing. I got two, three cell phones. But anyway, after you allege the facts that show how the, the initial incident of you and the officer, you know, the initial contact between you and the officer, then you want to allege in a very detailed manner everything, and I mean everything that is relevant to proving your point, everything that this officer did to you, everything, how it made you feel. If you have, like, if you have permanent, like, if, let's say if it's an excessive force claim, you know, they maced you or something like that. You want to list that, you know, you had to go to the doctor. You having vision problems in your eye. You can't see it. You know, your vision is not as good as it was. You want to allege that you're traumatized by this event because every time that you see blue lights behind you, on side of you, on the TV, if you hear them on the radio, you scared as fuck. You about to piss your pants, you know. All of that stuff matters. All of that matters. They have to compensate you for all of that. You want to allege if they broke your arm. You know, if they broke your teeth, your nose, if you're bleeding, if you lost feeling in your left jaw, or if you lost feeling in your arm, whatever. You need to be very, very, very detailed with your allegations against this police officer. Everything. But make sure that everything that you are talking about is relevant to proving an excessive force claim, if that's what you're going to roll with. If it's not relevant, like, for example, you would not be, if you don't have a malicious prosecution claim in your complaint, then you would not be talking about this police officer unlawfully arrested you. You would not be talking about it. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter if he unlawfully arrested you. What matters is he used an objectively unreasonable amount of force against you, meaning the facts did not support this officer's use of force against you. So that would be unreasonable, and that would be excessive force. He used an objectively unreasonable amount of force on you, and they call that excessive force. Under state law, it would be considered excessive force too, but here it's just an assault and battery claim. But on the federal level, they call it excessive force. Okay, caller 5157, I'm about to turn your microphone on right now. Sorry about that. What's good? Thank you for calling in. I'm your host, the Supreme Litigant. How you doing, man?
Peace, Scott.
Peace, God. What's good?
Hey, I was the topic that you're touching up on, brother. That's what I was. This is Ion, the one that you know, dealing with the situation down here in Alabama.
Gotcha. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, but the fact that you were touching up on that subject, it made me rehandle the situation that I dealt with in Kentucky. I wanted to vent a little bit on that. So
go ahead.
With what happened was the officer arrested me right after a car wreck. And my Empress, she had a fractured face, and we had our son with us as well. And they took me straight to jail while she could barely see out of one side of her face.
Wow.
And the reason they took me to jail was because of paraphernalia, which was some marijuana that I had. It was a couple of blunt roaches that I had in the ashtray. And it was driving without a license and driving without insurance. Now, I have the proper identifications, and we both know the difference between traveling and driving. They also took my tag as well, my private tag, my DOT exempt tag to be exact. And, man, they took me in there right after the car crash, man. Like, the airbag came out on me and everything.
That's crazy,
man. Yeah,
man,
I just wanted to get your, and it was pouring down rain when all of this stuff happened. An 18-wheeler swerved in front of us, and I hit the back of an 18-wheeler, and the 18-wheeler kept driving.
Damn.
Yeah, man, it's crazy, man. It's crazy. Like, that's why I said I wanted to talk to you about that in the private to get some more insight. But, this happened down in Kentucky, Elizabethtown, Kentucky, to be exact.
Yeah, that's where I got my CDL license at, Elizabethtown, Kentucky. How long ago was this?
This was probably about maybe about 4 months ago, 5 months ago.
Oh, well, you definitely have ground. You still within the statute of limitations. You should have 2 to 3 years to sue them for that. It varies state by state, though.
I would just like to get, you know, in private, I would like to get the best approach to dealing with that particular situation, because with your expertise in dealing with officers, I'm sure you know a great approach to that. And I could give you more insight and more details as to what happened. But
gotcha.
That's all I yield for.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, we can talk about that private. Like, I have somebody paid me for a consultation, so I have to have a consultation once the show is over for a gentleman. So it may not be today, but just remind me whenever you can, because I have a lot of stuff going on. But if that was about 4 months ago, yeah, you definitely within the statute of limitations. You have plenty of time if you ask me. And it's easy. Like, even if you don't remember, like, any of the officers' names or whatever, as long as you remember probably one of their names, you really don't have to remember any of them. But if you do, you know, that's good, and you can get the rest once you go through discovery. You can pretty much get anything that you want from them in discovery. As long as this discoverable and relevant, and relevant is a very, very, very broad definition. The Federal Rules of Evidence has a very broad definition for relevance. And when they say any, they mean any. But just because it's relevant doesn't mean it's relevant to the case. You know, so I think you got a pretty good shot, and especially in excessive force. It doesn't matter if they have probable cause or arguable probable cause or reasonable suspicion or arguable reasonable suspicion to arrest you. What matters is if they had an objectively reasonable basis for exercising that use of force on y'all. That is what matters. They have to have a reason for doing that, because that's why I made this video today. The Fourth Amendment only prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures. as long as they act reasonably, even if they made a mistake, they're going to get immunity. Now, I don't care what it is. They act reasonably, they are going to get immunity.
I just wanted to, excuse me, enlighten you a little bit. I have a federal exemption, and my father is a legalized grower.
Wait, hold on. So you, where did you get the, well, if it's federal, it should be, it should apply every damn well if it's federal.
It's under the Erie Mound Builders.
Erie Mound, I've never heard of that, but it seems like it's like you have an exemption from being prosecuted for, is it weed?
Yeah, any form of marijuana, hemp. I can actually carry up to 2 ounces of marijuana on my person.
Okay.
And that was also expressed to the officer as well.
Yeah, they probably never heard of it. If they did, they don't care. So
they didn't care.
Yeah, I believe.
Man, I already know, you know. So, but they were very corrupt. And the marshal, the white collar marshal, showed up because I called 911 on them and said that I felt like my life was in danger and rogue agents kidnapped me. And the marshal, he came, he gave me his name. And I keep everything private, but he gave me his information. He looked me dead in my eyes, and he still did not release me. They booked me in, and they released me on a recognizance.
So, wait, the feds came and got you over this shit?
This was a car crash that happened, and I got the marshal and the captain to pull up because I said this rogue agent kidnapped me. I felt like my life was in danger. Like, he threw me in the back of this car because I didn't have a driver's license and insurance, and I tried to explain to him that all of my property is held in trust. And I have a bond, and I have all the proper documents to clarify that. And he didn't.
Yeah, they don't.
Look at it.
Like, man, look, you, in my opinion, you just never, ever try to argue any type of law with no police. Don't even mention it to them, because they don't know law. They just, if they do, you may get one that, you know, that may try to do some good. You may. I mean, that's a small may. But personally, in my own personal experience, I do not argue the law with no police, because they just incompetent. They are not qualified. They just hired guns. That's it. They the henchmen. That's their job. They just henchmen. They just all muscle and no brains. So that's just my own personal opinion. I understand, you know, why you tried to tell them. It would make sense, you know, a reasonable person would do something like that. But these are not reasonable police officers. It's crazy, man.
They're supposed to be peacekeepers, and they're acting like agents.
They are agents. They're not. Like, you don't vote for police officers, man. You vote for the sheriff. They are hired by the state in its corporate capacity. That they have contracts with the state in its corporate capacity has contracts for these police departments, man. They private contractors, man. They have contracts. All this shit is a contract, man. The state in its corporate. This is what happens when they prosecute you. When they file these quasi-criminal charges against you, they are filing a lawsuit against you in the state's name, but the state it's not in its sovereign capacity, because the state is not sovereign. The people are sovereign. So that they're operating in the state's body corporate capacity, and they're suing you for breach of their corporate policy. That is what they are doing. They're filing a lawsuit against you. That's what they're doing. And if you ask me, I'm too... Huh?
I have to testify. You're correct. It's the state of Kentucky versus my all capital name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And
also, look, man.
I, I also wanted to give you a little bit of praise, man. I appreciate you for those documents you provided to me.
I gave them to you, man.
Yeah, I made all the clerks look crazy than a mug. I said, I want a motion for a discovery. I slapped the paper on the deck through the window, man. They were in there. Everybody in there was buck-eyed, man. They were just they wouldn't even give me a definite time when the judge would respond.
He has 14 days. He's going to issue an order, and the prosecution has to give you all of the evidence pursuant to that rule, which is in 14 days. Yeah, 14 days, bro. You know what, man? It's so funny. I think I heard Yusuf say something similar to this, but these motherfuckers are so corrupt that the Supreme Court was like, look, we going to let y'all do all this corrupt bullshit, but y'all can only do it according to these rules. We're going to give you motherfuckers rules that you need to follow. It's just crazy, man. Crazy. It's so crazy, man.
Man, you speaking facts. Like, and what's crazy is there's no law that states that the courts can rule over the people.
No, they can't. They administrative courts, man. Man, look, I'm studying sovereignty right now, and I'm understanding the concept of sovereignty. So if you sovereign, only the sovereign can make law. Only the sovereign can do that. That's why they say the Constitution is public law, and it's not public policy. It's public law. Policy is, I think that is very, it's corporate in nature is what I'm getting at. Like Walmart has a policy, but Walmart can't enforce their policy on you unless you work for Walmart. You know, these motherfuckers, they think they slick, man. But anyway, I'm getting to understand that we are if you're sovereign, you are a court. So you can order these judges to do anything because they're not sovereign. They are not sovereign. The people are sovereign. So if you're sovereign, then you make the law. Your law may not be reasonable, but that's the good part about that is when you file a claim against whoever you're going to file a claim against, you have other sovereigns sitting on the bench, and you have to convince these sovereigns that you have a reasonable cause of action or something like that. It's kind of confusing a little because I'm speaking in strictly common law terms. I'm not speaking in statutory stuff like that. So I'm going to study this stuff some more because I don't want to misrepresent anything. But I think I got a pretty good idea of what sovereignty is. Now, especially, I'm not sure. Have you seen that video when I posted that case? I think it was Michael versus State.
Yeah, I watched you go into the law library and pull it off yourself.
Yeah, that's an Alabama Supreme Court case. This was in 1867, and they say in this shit.
You gotta 1867. It's Georgia versus. I'm gonna pull it up real quick. Go ahead. My bad.
No, you're good. I'm gonna pull it up too. We can talk about this a little bit because nobody else is raising their hand right now. They're just listening to the show, so we can talk about this a little. What was this? I don't know who that is, but anyway, I'm going to pull the case up, too. Let me go on Google because I want to see it, too. I think I know what you're talking about, but I'm not, I don't want to, you know, jump to conclusions, but I think I know what you're talking about. Were you understanding when I was talking about the excessive force claim? Like the force that they use against you, it has to be reasonable. Were you getting that? I think he placed me on hold.
Yeah. I understand. I'm understanding it. There's a lot of things that you were saying that makes a lot of sense. I've been breaking down your documents specifically. Like I said, I really like the motions and the demand for the nature and cause. That's an exceptional document. And also having the Dun & Bradstreet number on there, man, that's just like anybody that doesn't know how to do that, if you want to know how to really see what's going on in your state, go to Dun & Bradstreet Lookup.
Mm-hmm.
And look up your city.
Like, yeah, it's on there. It's going to be on there.
You look up the city, the county, all
the
corporations.
All of them, bro. They all corporations, man.
Addresses and all match. Everything. P.O. boxes.
They corporations,
like,
man.
And it's, man, you get on there, you get to looking at the world differently, like, dang. So that means if I wanted to, I could take out a whole county just because they're acting out of law. But it has to be something that's petitioned by the people. You know, the people have to step in with the corruption. And that goes back to what you were saying earlier. And that's why I say it's a lot of things you're saying make a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know they have a charter. If you read that document, I mentioned a charter. I want your charter too. I want to know who gave you the authority to prosecute me in my court. That's what I want. That's exactly what I want to know. Who gave you that authority? Because clearly, this is wrong. I didn't give them that authority. I know what I told them they can do, and I know what I told them they couldn't do.
Planters et al. Versus the Bank of Georgia et al. 1824.
Let me see. Planters et al. Okay, et al. Yeah, that's by et al. Versus Georgia. Let's see. Georgia.
The Bank of Georgia 1824.
1824. Them old cases, good, man. Sometimes it might change, but they sometimes if you know the principles in there are still good. I'm gonna go and scroll through this right quick. Supreme Justice, 1824. The Circuit Court of the United States have jurisdiction of suits brought by the Bank of the United States against another bank incorporated under a law of a state. Let me see. This might not. Where's the rest of the case at? Let me go back. Oh, here it is, right here. Okay.
You heard what they said, brother?
Who's that?
Listen what they said. They said versus a bank of a state. Listen to that. Reread it again, brother.
Oh, okay. The Bank of the United States. Hold on, wait. The Circuit Courts of the United States have jurisdiction of suits brought by the Bank of the United States against another bank incorporated under a law of a state. So you're saying that like it's like they're different. The United States Bank and the Bank of the State are different banks. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. So like they're going, this is a very in-depth case about instruments and contractual law. This is a very deep case. I'm not going to keep interrupting. I'm going to go on mute.
Let me check and see if anybody's raising their hand right now. Nah, nobody is raising their hand, man. You got the flow, man. Go ahead.
Oh, man. My case, so I can.
Before you do that, let me say this. I went to my settlement conference, and there was me. The judge, as a matter of fact, the judge, I emailed him today and told him thank you for the way that he handled this case. Cause he treated me very fairly, in my opinion. He emailed me back and said, you're welcome, and he's remembered me and stuff like that. But anyway, so at this settlement conference, it's me, the judge, these police officers, their attorney, and then there was a woman in there. Now, I've never seen this woman before. She wasn't his paralegal. And I don't think any of the officers were, they wife and only parties are allowed in there. If you're not a party to the case, you can't come in there. But I found out who she was, and this is going to probably blow y'all mind away. But this woman, she was the insurance adjuster for the police officers because they have insurance. I call it tort insurance. When they violate your rights, they've been indemnified. Matter of fact, since you in in Alabama. I'm gonna give you the number, and you can verify it for yourself. It's let me see, where is this? Alabama. I have a copy of their of that city's insurance policy. There it is, right there. It's in where is it? I think it's in Montgomery. Yep, it's in Montgomery. It's called Alabama Municipal Insurance Corporation. And I called that number, and I was talking to a woman, and she was telling me that about 95 to 98% of all of the cities in Alabama have insurance with them. So, in other words, they cover their police officers' insurance. So, you know, like when you...
Can I interject real quick?
Well, yeah,
I got
go ahead.
A quick question while it's on my mind, and I'll let you continue. After you're saying what you're saying, could you please express to me more in depth how to find, locate, and the process in conducting a formal complaint against a blanket bond?
Blanket bond, okay. yeah. I'll do that. But back to what I was saying, do y'all know how, like, let's say that, you know, if it's two people that, you know, somebody hit somebody's car or something like that, so y'all stop. Of course, they're going to call the police. They're going to make, you know, they're going to want the facts of the case or whatever. Now, you got to, if whoever's at fault, you file a claim or a cause of action against the insurance. That's exactly what the fuck this is. That is exactly what this is. Matter of, let me see if I can find that paperwork. I'm gonna read this shit to y'all. This is what the attorney gave me at the settlement conference. I'm pulling out my suitcase right now. Give me 1 second, y'all. See if it should be in my non-disclosure agreement. Where is it at? Hold on, where you at? I don't want to hold up the line. Well, when I find that, I'm going to read that on the air when I find it. It must be in my, it should be in my, it's not in my suitcase, is it? Oh, it's not in there. It's in my office dish. Give me like 30 seconds, y'all. If I don't find it, then I ain't going to worry about it. That's not the case. That's not the case. Is this it? Nope, that's not it. I have so many folders in my office there. It's crazy. Case. What is it at? I had it on my desk. I don't know what I did with it. I don't think this is it. No. Nope. I want to read it so bad. I think this is it right here. Here it is right here. All right. Where is it at? This is, it's titled a release agreement. Receipt 7. The receipt of fishing, which is here, my knowledge. It has selling these homes, getting additional. Who is this? All these people calling me. I get phone calls every time. Damn, y'all. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm not going to read it now. Because it's certain stuff that I can say in this agreement and certain stuff that I can't say. So, hold on. This one is the department on the department to work in litigation and such from all injuries, damage. Anyway, I'll read that later. I'm not going to do it tonight because I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't read it. Some stuff I can't read. But anyway, they have insurance, long story short. And that woman, she was there. She's an insurance adjuster. So they are indemnified. If y'all don't know what indemnified means, I'm gonna look up this legal definition right quick for indemnification, and I'm gonna read this right quick. Indemnity. Right here it is, right here. Damn, why are all these people calling me? Here it is. Indemnity is a type of insurance that covers a wide range of damages and losses. In the indemnity clause, one party commits to compensate another party for any prospective loss or damage. That is what an indemnity agreement. They have insurance with the Alabama Municipal Insurance Corporation. I have a copy of that insurance policy that police department has. So if y'all call that number, matter of fact, let me give you that number right now. Where is it at? I'm going to give y'all that number right now. Look it up. Here it is right here. It's 334-386-3863. If y'all call that number, I'm not sure who I talked to, but I talked to some woman there, and I asked her how many, you know, cities did they insure, and she told me about 98, I'm going to say it's about 95 to 98% of every city in this state has insurance with them. This is who you ask for in your discovery. You want to know who is going to indemnify these officers. And they have insurance. But anyway, let's get back to the question. It was a blanket bond. If you're looking for their blanket bonds, Risk Management has the bonds. You have to contact Risk Management. They have the bonds. You have to, if I'm not mistaken, because I had to do it, they told me I had to do it in writing, though. You need to request. They don't have separate bonds, so you need to request the blanket bonds for all, you know, judges, prosecutors,
the judge, prosecutor,
district attorney. If I'm not mistaken, I want to say it's all of the judges, whether it be municipal, district, or circuit, all of the prosecutors. So yeah, it should be all of them. You want to request a copy of the state's blanket bond, you know, to that effect. What they're going to do is they're going to send you a copy of the state's insurance, and there's not going to be a specific name on it other than the state of Alabama's. And they're going to give you the, matter of fact, I have a copy of the old one right now. I think their insurance has, they changed it, because I think they get these every 2 years or every year or something like that. But who is this? I want to say, here it is right here. So the what I'm looking at right now says government crime policies declarations. But anyway, this is a lot of stuff. Here it is right here. I have a number. I can't remember. I called this number. I don't remember what number this was, though. But I called this number. But anyway, you call Risk Management. You write them a letter. I think the guy's name is Daryl Masters. Matter of fact, if you go on Risk Management website right now, let me see if I can find that for you. If you go on their website, you should see his name. I think it's Daryl Masters or something like that. Let me type it in right now.
Risk Management. Okay, let's see. I think it's going to be general liability. I think it's state employee injury, policy, loss management control. Did I go on? I think I went here. I mean, I haven't been on this site in a little while, so I don't want to give you the wrong information. But if you go on Risk Management, it's it's riskmgt.alabama.gov. If you go on there, let me see. Trying to find it. Wrongful incarceration, state employee, loss control policy. Property insurance, automotive education. Where is it at? I think it's policy management. There it is right there. But I forgot how did I get to this dude. I forgot who it was. But if you click on, you can read about this stuff. If you click on, what did I go on? Give me 1 second. Policy, like if you go on the website that I just mentioned and you go to a section that says other dorm policies, if you click on policy management and then you click on blanket fidelity and dishonesty bonds.
Risk, control, civil and criminal prosecutions. Let me see some.
We also exclude any loans for you to the suspect or he or she will release from that. I'm going to have to read this some more because I didn't see some of this stuff on here. I'm going to have to read that some more. But risk management has the bonds. You have to send them a letter. I think his name is Daryl Masters. I had his name, not his name, but I had his number. But one of them is an attorney. I think he's an attorney. So he'll send you a copy of the state's insurance policy. When he does that, there's a number. Let me see. They have they're insured by a company on this policy. They're insured by a company that out of Maryland. Maryland is called Fidelity and Deposit Company of Maryland. That's who has Alabama has insurance with on. It looks like this policy is lapsed. It looks like it's old because it expired 2022 of October of this year. So if you look up Fidelity and Deposit Company of Maryland, you would get their number, call them, and they'll tell you exactly how to file a claim against the state of Alabama's insurance. I've never filed a claim against one, but I'm quite sure it's very, very similar to filing a claim, you know, if somebody hits your car, you know, a wreck or something like that, or filing a lawsuit against it. It's very simple. I don't think it's hard. I need to go ahead and do this, you know, just learn how to do it. But that's all that I know about that so far. Huh?
Hey, that's enough information right there. I was just wondering if I should incorporate that with this case that I'm about to file. I was wondering, petition the same as a counterclaim?
No.
I looked up the definitions. But I was just wondering, like, would a petition be its own form of a complaint?
A petition is just another word for a complaint. Actually, all of them, don't let them confuse you with these names, because that's like, for example, here we call divorces a complaint for a divorce or a petition for a divorce. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the title of it says. It matters what the body of the complaint or the petition says. You know, the title is really not important. It matters what it says. You know, it's a principle. You know, it's substance over form. So the title is not important. But I've never filed a counterclaim, but I'm quite sure that a counterclaim is just you probably would allege some affirmative defenses against their claim, and then you would file facts in support of your causes of actions against them, and then you would just file your claim in court. That's it. I don't see it being any different than that, although I've never done one before, but I'm quite sure it's just you filing another, like you filing a lawsuit on top of another lawsuit. Or you filing a lawsuit in the same lawsuit that's pending before the court, but it's just under a different set of facts and different, probably different causes of action. Am I confusing you? Because, you know, sometimes I know I stutter. I be trying to talk so damn fast sometimes, so I kind of stumble over my words sometimes.
I'm just digesting what you're saying. I've never been into a court setting before, so I'm trying to get a feel for how to approach it, because this is my first, you know, my first case pertaining to something as far as a felony.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So I just wanted to see the best way to approach it. But I see it's something that I'm going to just have to find out on my own.
Yeah. I thought this book was going to help. I might have to look back through this book. I thought it was going to help because I have the annotations for the criminal code of Alabama. I have the complete annotated criminal codes for Alabama in my book I'm looking at right now. But, you have to break these statutes down. But what I can tell you, let me see. I'm going to look up your have you went to the local library down there yet or up there yet?
No, I haven't had the time to do it, honestly. I'm dealing with a newborn and clients and all type of other stuff. There's no excuse. Don't get me wrong. But I haven't had the time to do
it. Well, you got to put your family first. But at the same, this is something that I would probably take more serious or a little bit more serious than what I have been taking it because they're playing with your freedom. You know, this shit is a game to these people. They trying to see who they can send to their slave plantation so they can make some more money. That's what they trying to do.
Yeah, that possession of a forged instrument falls under the terms and rules of fraud, correct?
I would if I'm not mistaken, based on what I read in that statute, I believe it says something like that. Let me see what it calls it. Let me see.
I was approaching it as a fraud because they're trying to say that I'm trying to disturb the peace of Alabama. That's what it says in the complaint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's these folks. They get on my damn nerves. Let me see. Might have some for you. Let me see if it's been annotated. Let me see. I don't see no case law in here. I think this is possession of a forged instrument. Defendant is charged with criminal possession of a forged instrument in the third degree. A person commits the crime of criminal possession of a forged instrument in the third degree if he possesses or utters any forged instrument, forged like a forgery, so it's got to be some type of fraud. An element of forgery has to be fraud, with the intention to misrepresent or to defraud somebody out of something. But the convicted state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt, one, the defendant possessed or ordered a forged instrument which was or purported to be or which was calculated to become or to represent, if completed, an assignment or a check, draft, note, or other commercial instrument which does or may evidence, create, transfer, terminate, or otherwise affect a legal right, interest, obligation, or status. Describe instrument. Defendant had knowledge that the instrument was forged and the defendant acted with intent to defraud. The fact that you went to banks and all this shit is, who the fuck would knowingly go to a bank?
But,
come
on, man. I walked into the back room. You know, I wasn't sitting down. I chopped it up with the president of the bank. You get what I'm saying? Like, come on, man. And, man, it's crazy. It's like, I'm just thinking about it. Like, it's just like, wow, if I was trying to defraud or disturb the peace, I probably would approach it in a more drastic manner, in my opinion. But I wanted to read this, like, this is, my approach was breaking down the elements of fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go into the merits of it. That's what you're supposed to do. That's why I said this complaint is devoid of the prerequisite elements of the offense. Devoid means it's not there. Let me read this definition for you, if you don't mind. If you know what I'm talking about, I'm not going to worry about it. But that's why I said that in there. They always filing conclusory ass complaints against people. They don't have any facts, any factual basis to support this cause of action against you. They suing you. So I call it a cause of action. They call them charges. I call them cause of action. It's the same damn thing. They don't have no facts to support this shit. They just, this is what they do, man. Have you got a copy of that complaint yet?
Yep, and they gave me a copy of the warrant.
Okay. Now, if the warrant is supported by probable cause, meaning the facts or whatever, then it may not be valid. I don't really know because I haven't seen it. And the complaint. But they have to issue the complaint first, so I would go to the complaint. Somebody has to there has to be an affidavit attached somewhere too, unless the complaint is an affidavit.
Complaint is the warrant, apparently.
No, my name, no, fam.
When I walked down there, when I asked for the complaint, they gave me the copy of the warrants.
You need to get a copy of the complaint. Of course, the warrant would a reasonable conclusion to think that the facts alleged in the warrant are the same set of facts that are alleged in the complaint. You get what I'm saying, but that may not be the case here. These people don't know what they're doing.
They did not present any affidavit of any sort when I requested for the complaint. The only thing that they presented to me was both warrants that were issued out for my arrest, and I came back and filed the discovery and the demand for delegation of authority. And once I filed that into the record, I requested for an exact date or time when I would be getting contact from the judge, and she said she doesn't know.
I'm going to read Rule 2.1 of the Alabama Rules of Criminal Procedure for you. All criminal proceedings shall be commenced either by indictment or by complaint. That's it. They can issue a million warrants against your ass. If they didn't do it that way, it's just all smoke and mirrors, bro. It's just all smoke and mirrors. That's why I told you to ask for that complaint. All criminal proceedings shall be commenced, huh?
And when I requested for the complaint, I'm telling you what she gave me. She gave me the copies of the warrants, and she wrote the case number, quote-unquote, at the top of the warrant.
Nah, they got to get you a copy of that complaint, bro. You have a right to a copy of that complaint. Demand. Don't ask for shit. You know, just demand it. You know, do it in a respectful manner. But you won't have to go back down there.
So what I did was I looked at the warrant. So at the bottom of the warrant, the first one, it had the City of Reform Police Department. So I put the City of Reform, and I looked up the Dun & Bradstreet number, and that's where I put the case number on there, and I entered in the discovery and the demand for delegation of authority in that case, and then they issued out another warrant from Pickens County. So I looked up their Dun & Bradstreet number and did the same process, and I filed that into that case. And,
okay.
So I have a stamped copy. And I hand delivered it. So I filed my trust into the case as well.
Okay. The next thing you need to do, man, you need to make sure it's on the record that you have demanded a copy of the complaint, and they have refused to give you a copy of that complaint. That's a violation of due process. When they violate due process, they lose jurisdiction. That's your remedy for when they violate due process. Every right shall have a remedy. That's a principle in law. Every right shall have a remedy. You can sue for damn near anything in Alabama. It's guaranteed in the Constitution.
All I can say is, brother, this is a higher person making calls.
I get what you're saying. But you want it on the record, though.
And I know when we get them in there, I know all that stuff don't matter when we get them on that record. But what I'm talking about the in-between. Now, these are some, you know, These some real rogue people out here.
I agree. I don't put nothing past them.
Just from what I've seen so far, and the way, well, from what you're explaining, it clearly states that these people do not care about the law. They're going to do what they want to do. And that's something that I'm taking into account, as well as the chief. The actual chief is located out here, 45 minutes from where I'm located, over all the judges.
Oh, you're saying the chief judge?
Yes, sir.
Oh, so he lives about 45 minutes from you?
Yeah, he's 45. Well, the court is located 45 minutes from here.
Gotcha.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a very delicate situation.
Well, you can't let them just railroad the docket like that. You got to put everything on the docket, no matter what. You got to put everything on the docket. It needs to be on the record. So you need to let them know that you demand it. You know, put them on notice again that you demanded a copy of that complaint, and they failed to give you a copy of that complaint. You have a right to that. You have a right to know the nature and cause of that. You don't have a.
Wouldn't the complaint be included in the discovery?
Yeah, it would be included in there, but you don't even have to file a motion for discovery to get the complaint. All you have to do is say, I need a copy of this complaint, and they're supposed to give it to you. I'm going to read you Rule 2.3, Contents of a Complaint. This is why I always stress facts. A complaint is a statement made upon oath before a judge, magistrate, or official authorized by law to issue warrants of arrest, setting forth essential facts constituting an offense and alleging that the defendant committed the offense. The complaint may be written, typed, electronic, or computer generated. And, man, the Alabama Rules of Criminal Procedure, they straightforward. They have all of the law to support why they saying what they saying. All of it. That's Rule 2.3, I think, in the Alabama Rules of Criminal Procedure. This is what has to be in the complaint. Facts.
I would like to get, if you have a step-by-step, something that, you know, if I have to compensate you for your time, I would like to get a step-by-step way to approach taking my case or my claim directly into the Supreme Court.
You can, matter of fact, damn, I don't know how long this case been going. I think the federal question jurisdiction, I think that's timely. But you can pursue it to a 28 United States Code 1331, I think. You can file a notice of removal from state court, you know, because they violate your damn rights, and get it moved to federal court. And it the federal question is basically you have to plead a prima facie violation of a constitutionally protected right. It's the same thing in a civil rights lawsuit, because you're using the same statute when they say federal question. It's a question of law.
I want you to check this. This is what I'm hitting them with. This is the summary. 42 U.S. Code, subsection 1983, civil action for deprivation of rights. 42 U.S. Code, subsection 1986, action for neglect to prevent. 42 U.S. Code, subsection 2000A, prohibition against discrimination or segregation in places of public accommodation. 18 U.S. Code, subsection 1512, tampering with a witness, victim, or an informant. 18 U.S. Code, subsection 2071, concealment, removal, mutilation generally. 18 U.S. Code, subsection 1346, definition of scheme or artifice to defraud. 28 U.S. Code, subsection 1346, United States as defendant. 18 U.S. Code, subsection 872, extortion by officers or employees of the United States. 18 U.S. Code Subsection 1505, Obstruction of Proceedings Before Department Agencies and Committees. 5 U.S. Code Subsection 7311, Loyalty and Striking. 42 U.S. Code Subsection 1985, Conspiracy to Interfere with Civil Rights. 18 U.S. Code Subsection 245, Federal Activities. 42 U.S. Code Subsection 14141, Cause of Action. 18 U.S. Code Subsection 1513, retaliating against a witness, victim, or an informant. 18 U.S. Code Subsection 1510, Obstruction of Criminal Investigations. 5 CFR 2635.702, Use of Public Office for Private Gain. 18 U.S. Code Subsection 1918, Disloyalty and Asserting the Right to Strike Against the Government. 18 U.S. Code Subsection 1506, Theft or Alteration of Record or Process, False Bail. 18 U.S. Code Subsection 241, Conspiracy Against Rights. 18 U.S. Code Subsection 242, Deprivation of Rights Under Color of Law. I got a couple more. You want me to keep going?
No, I get what you're doing, but I mean that's a lot. But how you do that? Look, how you procreate criminal charges against them in the federal is basically the same way you do it on the state. You have to draft an affidavit, and you have to allege facts constituting a violation of a constitutionally protected right. That's what you have to do. But you would have to call down, to the United States District Court. You're probably in the Middle District Federal Court venue or whatever, so they would have venue over that because that's where you are unless the actions took place somewhere where they don't have, where venue wouldn't be proper. But you would call down. Now, they'll tell you how to do it. And the Attorney General, I would imagine that you would have to take that complaint before a magistrate first, which would more than likely probably be a United States magistrate judge. And the magistrate judge would have to sign off on that complaint because that's who, when you file a civil rights lawsuit or whatever, that's who gets your complaint. The magistrate judge gets your complaint. And once they get your complaint, if you pay the filing fee, then they're not going to screen your complaint if you pay the filing fee, which is, I think it's $402. Once you do that, then he's going to issue an order, telling you when, serve service of process and all that shit or whatever. Give you time to serve all your defendants. But anyway, the magistrate judge should, if you do the complaint right or the affidavit right, should issue an arrest warrant to the United States Marshal, telling them to arrest them or whoever. It should work something to that effect because it's very similar. They just have different names.
I appreciate that information. I really do because, like I said, it's a brotherhood taking place.
Yeah, it is. I don't doubt that at all.
And they're exerting their force behind the scenes. I know that they're meeting up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a conspiracy. I mean, it's in plain sight. Only a person that doesn't have sense wouldn't be able to comprehend what they're doing.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to get them on that conspiracy. It's going to be hard, but you should get them for something, interfering with, I want to say it's 1840, was it 18 United States Code, 422 or 4, it's, I don't know what, I think it's 224 or 240, something like that. It's violation of constitutionally protected something. It's a criminal statute. You can't prosecute that case because it's criminal, but you can, draft an affidavit and take that affidavit down to the United States Magistrate Judge. And I don't see why not. That they won't issue an arrest. I mean, issue a warrant for an arrest or something like that. It may be different because, they're trying to arrest public servants. So, they don't really like to do that. So it may be different. I think I'm going to try that just to see what they're going to do. I think I'm going to try that. For real, because so I like.
I got to take a trip up to Montgomery.
Is that the district court for Montgomery County?
No,
I'm gonna check and see for you.
No,
I'm about to check right now.
Pickens
County. Let me check for you.
I have to go to Tuscaloosa, and that's what it is, I believe.
I'm gonna check for you. There it is, right there. Let me go. All right, if you go to 28 United States Code, Chapter 5, Section 81, hit district courts, you know, hit Section 81 for Alabama. You in the middle district, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Let me go down. Middle district. Okay, the middle district comprises of three divisions. Pickens County, let's see now. Coffee Junior. I don't see Pickens County on here. Let me see. I see Atuga, Barber, Bullock, Butler, Chilton, Coosa. So this, now that's Pike County. Okay. Coffee, Dale, Geneva, Henry, and Houston. Chambers, Lee, Macon, Randolph, Russell, Tallapoosa. Dallas, here, Wilcox. Okay, so you're going to probably have to go to the Northern District. So let me go up here and see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough.
Looks like Court of the Eastern District shall be held in Anniston. No, you got to go to the Eastern District. I ain't know they had, how many they ain't. It looks like we got four of them. I didn't even know that shit. You see, the Eastern Division comprises of the counties of Calhoun, Clay, Cleburne, and Talladega. The court for the Eastern District shall be held in Anniston. The Western Division comprises of the counties, also is Western Division, I'm sorry. The Western Division comprises of the counties of Bibb, Greene, Pickens, Sumter, and Tuscaloosa. So you, I mean, why is that? That's weird. I thought we only had three of them. Northern Division, Middle District. I guess I was wrong. It must be a lot. It must be about four or five of them then. But yeah, you got to go to the, I think it's Western Division. Yeah, the Western Division. So you should be somewhere close to Greene, Pickens. Well, you in Pickens, Sumter, Tuscaloosa, and Bibb. So you're not too far from those counties then, if that's where they want you to go. Let me see, Western Division. I just saw, yeah, the Western Division comprises of the counties of Bibb, Greene, Pickens, Sumter, and Tuscaloosa. Now you got to go to Tuscaloosa. It says Court of the Western Division shall be held at Tuscaloosa. The hell was that? Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir. I'm about to look it up now.
Okay, let me see. Let me, if you go to, looks like United States, oh, no. So it's United States Code Section 81. I gave you the wrong code. It's 28 United States Code Section 81. And if you scroll down to, it looks like A5. Yes, A5. If you scroll down to A5, A5 is going to tell you the Western Division comprises of the counties of Bibb, Greene, Pickens, Sumter, and Tuscaloosa. And it is going to say Court for the Western Division shall be held at Tuscaloosa. Did you find it?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. That's crazy. I thought it was the Northern District.
Me too. Me too. So Tuscaloosa probably not that far from you if that's where they want you to go.
And you're talking about the bankruptcy court, right?
No, that's the district courts. I think the bankruptcy courts and the district courts are different. You know, you ain't going to no bankruptcy court. So it's only... So it's Northern, Middle, and Southern. Southern District Courts of Alabama. But why do you got a Western District? I don't know. Northwestern. Let me see. What is this? Eastern Division. Okay, so all of this is considered in the Northern District. But it's weird. Tuscaloosa. They must got a lot of courts. They have to have a lot of courts now. It says court for the Northwestern District shall be held at Florence. Boy, these are federal courts. So they let me see something. They got to have a lot of. They got to have, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They got to have a lot of U.S. district courts down here. They got to, because this don't even, this is confusing me, but according to this statute, yeah, you have to go to Tuscaloosa. This statute is accurate, too, because I filed my lawsuit in Mobile. So they got about 9 damn courts. They got to. All together. Okay. The Southern District comprises 2 divisions. Northern Division. Oh, okay. I see what they did. Okay. All right. But you can actually, if I'm not mistaken, I believe you can actually Google a civil rights complaint on, you know, for a criminal civil rights complaint, like how it's supposed to look or something like that. If I'm not mistaken, I believe you can Google it. Let me see if I can Google one right now.
I was doing a petition in the form of a remonstrance.
Petition? I've never heard of that term before. What's a remonstrance?
It's basically a petition.
Petition for what?
For the complaint that's being brought forth to the body.
I don't know. I would have to study that some more because I'm a little lost on that. Let me see. I think it's title 18. Here it is right here. Title 18, United States Code 242. Make it a crime for a person acting under color of any law to willfully deprive a person of a right or privilege protected by the constitutional laws of the United States. PDF. Let me see. In the United States, the amended complaint, which was
forcefully revoked for protest.
It's a what?
A forcefully revoked for protest.
I would have to study that some more. I don't want to give you the wrong information.
Okay.
Looks like they are. What are they doing in this case? Yeah, she came on 28-9. Yeah, they screening her complaint. That's what they're doing. It's a conspiracy of rights of citizens. What is she filing? I don't know what type of stuff this woman filed, but they just making her look bad in this case, from what I'm seeing. Right here. What is this? This is in Michigan. Somebody filed something. Was called that a fight was going on. What is this? Fight that led to the activity violated civil rights under the following statutes, code of the law. Conspiracy against right flight of civil rights. Defendant's motion to dismiss. Legal standard. Yeah, they filed a Rule 12b6 motion to dismiss. They gonna do that every time. There's no cause of action based upon the federal sentence. Yep. They gonna do that every time. In the first two claims, plaintiff seeks monetary damages against defense to the two federal criminal statutes, conspiracy violation. Plaintiff attempts to sue defendants for monetary damages under the criminal statutes. It's frivolous. A private citizen lacks a judicially cognizable interest in the prosecution or non-prosecution of another. Yeah, that's a Supreme Court case on the United States as prosecutor can bring a complaint under 18 United States Code 241 and 242, the criminal analog. 42 section 1983, which, yeah, they're right. This court has long held that individuals cannot claim monetary damages arising from alleged violations of 18 United States Code, section 241 and 242. Then they cite a case in support of their contention. This court specifically rejects such a private claim for monetary damages. This is all criminal. Where is it at? Court affirmed dismissal of plaintiff's lawsuit, which sought to issue a warrant for the arrest of defendants under section 241 and 242 because the relief sought in the complaint is not available to a private citizen. The plaintiff's attempt to invoke 18 United States Code section 241 failed because the statute does not provide a civil action for damages and a private citizen cannot initiate a federal criminal prosecution. Probably just missed a complaint pursuant finding that the district court properly dismissed the plaintiff's complaint pursuant to 18 United States Code section 241 and 242 because the plaintiff has no private right of action under either of these criminal statutes, so on and so forth. Let me see, what is this? In his third claim, plaintiff seeks damages under federal civil rights statute. What is his one? What? That's a long number. What kind of statute is that? Anyway, it shall be unlawful for any government authority or any agent thereof or any person acting on behalf of another governmental authority to engage in a pattern or practice of conduct by law enforcement officers or by officials or employees of any governmental agency to withhold from the administration of juvenile justice or the incarceration of juveniles that deprives a person of rights. Well, she tried. Didn't get it right, but they tried. Statute of limitations, less stringent, blah, blah, blah. Okay. This is easy, though, man. All of this stuff is easy. If you apply the same principle when you draft in your complaint, you need to apply these same principles when you draft anything. If it's relevant, you talk about it. If it's not relevant, you don't talk about it, period. Just period. I think I'm going to
I think this is something. As a matter of fact, I forgot to tell y'all this. I'm getting ready to file another lawsuit against a police officer. It'll probably be filed. I'm probably going to do it in January, but the complaint is about 95% done. And I'm going to draft a criminal affidavit against him and file that in the United States District Court, which is probably about a couple miles, not a couple miles, but about an hour or two away from where I am. Down, and that's the court that I have to go to. So I'm going to file that in there. I'm going to get this man on everything. I'm going to do it in the state court, and I'm going to do it in the federal court, and I'm going to file a civil lawsuit against him in state court. I'm going to make sure that he never, ever, ever, ever does anything else to me again, and I'm going to make sure that my name stays on a do not detain list. And I'm going to keep y'all up to date on that. Let y'all know, because this will be my first time drafting an affidavit pursuant to Title 18 United States Code Section 241 and 242. I just want to see what their reaction is going to be when I draft this and I go down to that federal courthouse and I file this in there. I want to see what they're going to say. Well, I am hungry. I need to order me something to eat. I had some Jamaican food today. It was so good, but now I'm just starving. But anyway, did you have any more questions?
What was that question?
I was asking, did you have any more questions? I guess either by the lawsuit. Well, you said you wanted to talk about that private. You can send the consultation fee to my Cash App or PayPal or whatever. If you're gonna do that, just do it through PayPal so you know your purchase is secured, and you can use my email address on PayPal is smartloctv@gmail.com. That's the word smart, the word loc, LLC, and tv@gmail.com. You can send it there, and I'll call you. I'll call you. And then we can talk about we can set a date and a time for the consultation, and we can just go from there. The hell? Okay, my mind and thoughts are everywhere, y'all. Sorry about that. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to jump back into this lawsuit, and I'm going to start back talking about the ultimate facts section of your complaint, because I cannot stress to y'all enough how important this is. You are drafting this complaint. You need to plead facts that show a clearly established, constitutionally protected right of which a reasonable officer would have known about has been violated. When you do that, they are not going to get qualified immunity. It's going to wait. If you do that, like I said, you're going to get nine times out of 10, you're going to get an answer. And this answer from their attorney is not going to make any sense whatsoever. They're going to make up so many so-called affirmative defenses that are not affirmative defense. They're just going, they're desperate. So they just throw anything out there that they can do. Okay. When they do that, you can either file a motion to strike pursuant to Rule 12F of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Because the affirmative defense is legally insufficient as a matter of law. Or you could just be like, you know what, we'll wait until discovery, and then, I'll file a motion to strike then. So after you do that, they answer your complaint, whatever. You're going to get the judge is going to issue a a scheduling order. Well, not a scheduling order. He's going to order y'all to have a rule, I think it's a Rule 26 conference or something like that. Basically, this conference is when UN Defense Council, y'all get together and y'all discuss how the case is going to proceed. Y'all talk about, y'all mutually agree on how long the trial is going to take, whether it be 3 days, 5 days, 10 days, 12 days, whatever. Y'all talk about how many requests, how many sets of requests for admissions that each party gets, how many interrogatories that each party can propound to each other, subpoena deus tecum, requests for productions, how many sets of those, stuff like that. When dispositive motions have to be turned in, like a deadline for that, so on and so forth. After that, then you're going to get, let me back up a little bit, because in that conference, y'all are going to talk about how long, y'all have to mutually agree that how long that discovery will last. You know, so you may get 6 months of discovery. You may get a year of discovery. It all depends on the case. If it's simple, you know, it is not too complex, you'll probably get about 6 months to a year of discovery. This discovery will not be easy because their attorney is going to drag their feet. Okay, they're not going to give you everything that you want. So you're going to have to go to the court, and y'all going to have to have a mediation conference. All of my conferences were on the phone, and I had to draft my issue, you know, with why I wanted the evidence that I wanted, and they had to draft an objection on why they were objecting to the evidence that I wanted. And both of us got on the phone and we talked to the judge and we explained everything to the judge, and the judge made a ruling over the phone. And then the judge he docketed the ruling a couple days later into the court docket. That's how everything went in my case. It may be different for you, but that's how it went in my case. When you're going through discovery, you need to know what to ask for. The one thing you want to ask for is you want to make sure that you get a copy of the indemnity agreement. Whoever the police officer of insurance, you want to get a copy of that. You want to know how much, how many assets that these police officers own, because you are entitled to know that. They're going to object to it. The attorney, he's going to object to that. I'm telling you that right now, because the attorney who I asked for that information, he objected to it. He flat out told me, I'm not giving you my client's financial information. That's what he told me. So we had to go to court. I mean, we had to have a phone conference, you know, whatever, a mediation conference, whatever you want to call it. And the judge ruled in my favor. He told me that they didn't have to give me everything that I wanted right now, but they had to give me something, you know. So I got that. Any type of evidence that you would need to prove your claim, you need to get all of that, everything. Anything you can think of during discovery, you need to ask for it. If it's relevant to proving your point, you need to ask for it. Videos, phone calls, voicemail, whatever. If they have it, and you think if you think they got it, you need to ask for it. It's not going to be easy. Like I said, they're going to drag their feet. They're going to make this so difficult for y'all. I'm just telling you what it is. That's what they're going to do. Let's see. Once discovery is over with, you know, after all your depositions and affidavits have been filed, your requests for admissions, requests for productions, anything like that, either you or defense counsel can motion for a summary judgment based on all of the discovery that you have. Summary judgment is pretty easy, in my opinion, to beat. If there's a genuine issue of a material fact in dispute, then they are not going to get summary judgment. And that's, in my opinion, it's best to prosecute your own case, because who knows the facts of the case better than you? So just imagine if you also know the law as applied to the facts of your case. Just imagine how much stronger you can make your arguments and stronger you can argue your case. Easy. They're not going to get summary judgment. They only get summary judgment if there's no genuine issue of a material fact in dispute and movement is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. That's the only way that they'll get summary judgment. They're not going to get it. They're going to motion for summary judgment on qualified immunity and state agent immunity. Any type of immunity that they can think of that's relevant, they're going to motion for summary judgment on that. I'm just letting y'all know that. That's what they're going to do. Let's see. Once they get denied, if they get denied summary judgment, we're just going to say that once they get denied summary judgment on qualified immunity grounds, they do have a right to appeal that to the circuit court, to the higher court for that U.S. district court. They have a right to appeal that. They may appeal it, just to drag the case on, even though they're going, like they can know that these people would know that they are going to lose on appeal and still file an appeal just to just drag the case out. It's just crazy, man. But that's the type of stuff that they do, That's the type of stuff that they do. So, this is the type of stuff you got to put up with, man. Like, it's mentally exhausting because it's just going to be you. You don't have an attorney. You don't have a paralegal. It's just you. You prosecuting this case by yourself. And they're going to have the advantage because they have an attorney. The attorney has a prosecutor. I'm not a prosecutor, but the attorney has a paralegal is what I'm getting at. He has a team, So it's going to be it's not going to be easy is what I'm trying to say. Just to let you know. But it's going to be worth it. Don't be scared. Go in there. Do what you got to do. You have me to coach you through this whole entire thing. I do this once a week. Well, I try to do it once a week, 2 hours free. I can walk you through the whole entire thing. Private consultations, I charge $50 an hour for private consultations and $25 per half hour. Just to let y'all know, I'm about to actually get ready to get off the line. I'm going to get off in about 5 minutes. Nobody, have any more questions. Seems like everybody just want to listen, so I don't have a problem with that. Man, I'm on this issue. I'm looking at something right now. It says Kanye West arrested after Saturday Night Live monologue. And it looks like it's live right now, and it looks like it's Dave Chappelle. I got to check this out. This is very interesting. I need to check that out. I'm seeing this thing. It says, I'm reading something from the Institute for Justice. It says, judges are supposed to uphold and defend the Constitution, not violate and ignore it. That's a no-brainer. Anyway, so let's say, they get denied immunity in district court and they get denied immunity in the appellate court. So once they get denied immunity twice, they're going to come at you with a settlement. They're going to come at you with a settlement offer. I wouldn't take the settlement. If you know you're going to win your case, I would not take the first initial settlement offer. I wouldn't take that one. I would take it after they get denied immunity. Then I'll take it. If it's a reasonable amount, settlement, they're going to say, look, we're just going to settle this case. We got denied immunity. You don't have to prove anything other than what you already approved. We don't want to go before a jury. So we're just going to end this case. We're just going to settle it. And they're going to issue a non-disclosure agreement, which is a contract, by the way. And it's certain stuff that they're probably not going to want you to talk about and say. They're going to also say in that non-disclosure agreement that they don't admit to any guilt or any wrongdoing or anything like that. That's how they do, man. That's how they do. So y'all give me a second. Let me get me I need it. Well, yeah, I have a I think I'm going to go ahead and end the show because I don't have anybody else raising their hand right now. I have a consultation that I need to get prepared for. And I think I'm going to go ahead and get ready for that. Anyway, thank everybody, you know, for tuning in tonight. I really appreciate it. I strongly advise y'all when y'all call in to just press one if you have questions. Because, if you don't ask, I can't help you. So just call in and press one, and I'll get to you as soon as I can, okay? But that would conclude the show tonight. Thank you, everybody, for their time. Hope you all enjoyed the show. The Supreme Litigant is out. Peace.